Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. We're going to be doing a series over the next several weeks. I've invited a few guys on that know a thing or two about elk hunting, and I'm going to be throwing them very similar scenarios that you may encounter or that most guys who've done any kind of elk hunting have encountered on their hunts, and see how they would handle it. And even though a lot of the questions will be the same, a lot of scenarios will be the same, it's very interesting to listen to the different approaches from these guys that seem to get it done year in and year out. So I think it's a really neat perspective and a cool way to learn. That way, when you're presented with those scenarios or those situations out in the field, you'll be able to apply it. I also want to urge you guys to take the time and please go on iTunes or the Podbean app. Give us a review. It's super important for us. Helps the ratings, helps keep us ahead of everything. It helps us keep this podcast free, to be honest with you. So if you get out there and do that for me, I'd appreciate it. And please go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. They're our number one sponsor, and they put out an awesome product, and we appreciate them. And I'd appreciate it if you could go check them out. Let's roll into this next episode.
Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're back on with Corey Jacobson, and we're going to throw a few more scenarios with him, or Adam, excuse me, for the What Would Corey Do segment that we're doing. What's going on, Corey?
Enjoying another beautiful day and one day closer to elk season.
Yeah. I actually did it the last couple of days. I've been doing a lot of talking with guys about elk, which is, potential clients and such. So like, it's been all I've been thinking about the last few days. So it's kind of nice to be doing these podcasts right now.
Totally.
So I got a few more scenarios for you. If you guys missed the last episode, we ran through a few different common scenarios that you face in the elk woods, and I'm going to drop a few more on Corey right now. So this has happened to me a couple times. Matter of fact, this happened to me in Utah a couple years ago in 2017 when I had my limited entry hunt there. I was hunting this canyon, and I picked this spot because I had hunted it for deer a bunch, and I've always seen a bunch of cow elk in there, like hundreds of cow elk, and no exaggeration. So I knew it was going to be a hot spot. Well, we got there that morning, dropped into the canyon, and man, the bulls were screaming in every single direction, like to the point that it was so hard to determine which way to go and what to do and who was the target, you know. I knew I had two bulls in this particular scenario. I had two bulls in there that I was after, and I thought I knew what their bugle sounded like. So that's kind of how I approached it, because I had a little bit of history. But I know when you get into the situation where you could throw out any call and everything's answering you, how do you determine which way to go and how to get them killed?
Yeah, no, and that's every hunter's dream scenario right there. You drop into a canyon and bulls screaming all over, and you know, that's what we dream about. But it does come with some challenges sometimes. And, you know, I think for me, you drop into a canyon, you have bulls screaming everywhere. Your first inclination is to go after the one that sounds the biggest, right?
Right.
And that's not always the best play. And, you know, for me, most of what we hunt is just over-the-counter, general-type tags. And so we're not really singling out a big bull, you know, necessarily. Like, we don't have a specific bull that we've patterned or that we've scouted and that we're trying to hunt. Mm-hmm. We get into a situation like that where there's five or six bulls bugling and we're in elk heaven, and it doesn't matter which one comes in. You know, we're excited to get a shot. But with that being said, there's a couple challenges. First, when you enter the fray, you know, with some calling there, you're just another sound. And that's, you know, they're all bugling at each other. They're communicating, they're saying whatever. But for you to just start bugling, you're not probably going to be able to call one of those bulls right to you. You know, right. They bugle. You throw out your bugle. They bugle. But there's not a conversation going on. And so the first thing you have to do is you have to pick which bull you're going to go after. And then you have to engage that bull in a conversation. And he has to know you're talking to him. And, you know, you have to get close to him. And then you have to start talking to him. And you have to make sure he knows that every time he talks, you're smacking him in the mouth. Mm-hmm. And you're cutting him off. You're interrupting him. You're having a conversation with him. You're not just making noise. And so that's the important part of calling when you get in that situation. But in determining which one to go to, you really have to look at the whole picture. And the biggest sounding one, you might have to blow through every other elk in there to get to that biggest sounding one. And that's great if that's your only focus. But if you mess up that biggest sounding one, you've already messed up every other elk in there. And now you've completely, you know, taken away all your other opportunities. So for me, I look at it as which one can I go to without messing up the others? Which one can I focus on so that if I mess that one up, I still have the other ones as a play and I can move to the next one. So it's very strategic in terms of what the thermals are doing. I don't want to go if the thermals are coming down, for instance, I don't want to go up to the head end of the canyon and pick out that one bull knowing that everything down below me has now smelled me and I've ruined those opportunities. So, you know, an example, we were hunting here in Idaho, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And a good friend of mine, Tyler Crockett, I share an office with him here. And Tyler still had an elk tag, and Donnie and I had both filled our tags here in Idaho. And so I just told Tyler, we're in the office one morning, like, hey, you got your elk tag? He's like, yeah, I actually have two. Here in Idaho, you can buy a second leftover non-resident elk tag and actually shoot two elk during the season.
Nice.
And I said, well, let's go out tomorrow. So the next morning we went out. It actually was one of those rainy, snowy mornings. We got up pretty high and there was snow, but everything was fogged in and just, you know, you couldn't really hear any bugles. And so trying to locate elk was tough. But we got out on a ridge and bugled, and this canyon just lit up. There were like three or four bulls bugling down there. And there's one right across the draw from us, which is perfect. The thermals were still coming down. And so we set up to call it in. Well, while we were calling, another smaller bull slipped in from behind us and actually came into like 40 yards from where Tyler and Donnie were. And I was back behind calling and smelled us and took off down the canyon, which, you know, was fine. It was a bonus. We didn't even know it was there. So we started moving in on this other bull that we'd set up on that we could tell he was with a cow. He wouldn't come across the draw to us. And we got over on him, really nice 6x7. We're moving up and he just wouldn't commit to us. He had the cow, one cow, and he was locked in on her. And so as we're moving in, he went quiet. Well, this first bull that we had bumped had hooked up with a couple cows, and now they're coming back up the ridge towards us. So Tyler turns around, I slip up above him, call, the bull comes right underneath him, he shoots, it runs 40 yards and falls over right there. Well, meanwhile, there's still two bulls bugling up the canyon from us, the one that sounds the biggest. And had we went for that one that sounds the biggest initially, it would have blown out every other elk below us. So we're sitting there high-fiving, and this bull just keeps firing off up above us and actually sounds like he's getting a little closer. And so I turned to Tyler and said, hey, you have your second tag, right? And he said, yeah. And I said, you want to fill it? And he's like, well, you know, I was kind of wanting to hold out, you know, and if it's a big bull, yeah. And so we go up there and proceed to call this bull down the canyon to us. And he comes by, I think, 8 yards from Tyler. Tyler shoots him. It runs down the hill like 60 yards from his first bull and falls over. So, and it turned out to be a giant 6-point, like 50 inches wide, just a great big old mountain bull. And so anyway, it just, you know, had we went for the big one, we wouldn't have had an opportunity for a second one, which that's a very rare case that you get to shoot two elk anywhere anyway, let alone be able to do it. But had we messed up that first one, we would have been able to call in the second one and potentially get a shot at it. So I think, you know, in a nutshell, to wrap that up, you've got to pick the bull that's not going to mess up the rest of the elk if it doesn't work out. And you got to kind of think ahead there. The other thing is, if you're trying to follow that bull up the mountain and he's following cows, he might not be the best one to go after right then. 2 hours from then, when he gets to his bedding area, he might be a great target. So you know, a lot of things that go into determining which one to go to. But the last thing I want to do is eliminate other opportunities as I'm going for one of them. So thermals are important. And then again, engaging in that conversation with that specific bull that you've actually decided to go for.
So what are some of the things you're doing to determine what you want to say to this bull, how you want to communicate to the bull? Yeah, when it's that much going on.
Yeah, and that's super important. Actually, you probably know it's illegal to call to elk in a national park. So like Yellowstone National Park, you can't call to elk.
Oh, really?
And it's really interesting when you go to a place like that, because the calling dynamics are different. When, you know, there's a whole bunch of elk, they're calling all over, there's bugling everywhere. It's really interesting to watch them. But I've had opportunity in situations like that, either a unit that's closed to hunting or something, where you can go and practice calling. But it's a little different. And, you know, I think there are things that we can absolutely learn in those situations. But one time I was in that situation where I was able to be around a whole bunch of elk. There were, I would say, somewhere between 300 and 400 cows split up in 6 or 7 different herds, and 6 or 7 different herd bulls with, you know, probably 10 or 12 different satellite bulls running around bugling. And it was absolute chaos, you know, just bugles everywhere. And I'd throw out my bugle and it was like they didn't even hear it, you know, and I couldn't tell, are they answering each other? Is there a system to how they're bugling? What are they saying? And I couldn't get their attention with my bugle. And I realized that there's so much bugling going on, it's just noise to them until you get in close and engage in that conversation. And so the way I do that is, you know, I get in as close as I can to that bull, and it usually takes a handful of times to actually get him to understand I'm talking to you. But every time he starts to bugle, I bugle right over the top of him. I just hammer him right over the top of him, cut him off. And after 3 or 4 times of that, he starts to realize, hey, this guy is actually trying to tell me to shut up. He's talking directly to me. And every time I try to say something, he's cutting me off. And then you can engage in that conversation with that elk. And
that's a challenge bugle that you're.
It is. Yeah. Okay. So it's a super aggressive, high pitched scream. Just every time he starts to talk, I'm putting that emotion into it and saying, quit talking. Don't say another word. I'm the big bull right here, and I don't want you to talk again. You know, you're a moron. You're an idiot. Don't say anything. And you have to say that, and you have to take that mindset when you're talking to that elk of putting that emotion into it and literally communicating to him, shut up, quit talking, cut him off every time. And, you know, it doesn't take too long. They get frustrated. They're like, every time I try to say something, every time I try to convince all these cows that I'm the king, that they need to come and hang out with me, this guy's cutting me off and running over the top of me and trying to steal my cows. So, I mean, it's interesting when you get in that situation not to do that and just to throw out a bugle, just to join that, you know, cadence or whatever that each of these guys are kind of bugling in order. You throw out your bugle and you can do that for 2 hours, and it's the most beautiful and entertaining vocalization you can hear, but it's super tough to get an elk to come to you like that. Satellite bulls a lot of times will, but if you're trying to get one of those bigger bulls until you engage with them one-on-one, it can be really hard to get their attention and get them to come in.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, I'm going to share with you what I did. And well, I didn't actually get one that morning. I'll tell the whole story, so you know why I didn't. But anyway, I actually set up and I was literally in the middle of the canyon. It was wasn't really a flat bottom, but it got pretty level down at the bottom, and all the elk are around us. And I realized that most of them were like locating, like location type bugles or advertising type bugles, if you want to call them. And there was one or two of them that I could tell that was being defensive. So I figured that those two were probably the bigger two that I was after. One for sure, I could tell it was him. He was being defensive. He was definitely challenging. He was definitely, you know, getting frustrated and pretty sure I heard him try to round up his cows a couple times. but there was bulls in between us. And I wasn't 100% sure who was what and what where, but just because it was really just like, it was so echoey too. It was even hard to tell exactly which direction things were coming. I kind of set up and I started pretending I forgot about what they were saying. And I started pretending like I had cows and that I was tending a cow. And we started hearing a lot of the bugles getting closer and closer of the guys that were advertising. And it was kind of like, how do I describe this? Cause it was such a weird, I was on a little ridge on the bottom of inside this canyon. So there was like a higher rise at the bottom, like, and down on my right-hand side, there was a bull that was coming up and he was trying to call at my cows. I had my buddy was cow me doing some different cow sounds. I was raking trees. I was doing all that. And, you know, just really trying to create the scenario that I had cows. And I heard this other one coming up and he came up and it was a pretty decent bull. It was about 320 bull, but you know, you got a limited entry tag in Utah and you know, I was looking for something bigger. And
yeah.
Well, he came up and he kind of skirted around us. I think he got our wind, but whatever ended up happening is I didn't end up seeing him. And I had a shot at him, but after that I didn't end up seeing where he went. But they kind of left open the path to go after that bull that was being defensive and the one that sounded big and throaty, and I would pretty sure it was him. So my tag was a rifle tag, but I was bow hunting. And I kept going toward, now that that bull that was below us to my right was out of the way, I felt like I had a clear shot. You know, obviously if there was other bulls or elk in the way that weren't making noise, I didn't know about it. But I started cutting towards that bull. And I must have got to about 150 yards at this point. And that's when I started challenging back at him. And he got really fired up. And I started – it was real thick at this point. I started cutting the distance again, and I feel like I was about – within 100 yards, I was starting to see some asses of cows up ahead of me. And I knew the cows were between him and I. And then out of nowhere, I heard 5 shots ring out. And then no more bugling. Not from him anyway. So I try to get closer. All those elk – busted out, and I was like, they're all gone, and I didn't see him. So I thought my target bull was dead. It's why I end up shooting the bull that I shot anyway. But that's how my morning went. But that's kind of what I did. I think had that not had gotten interrupted by another hunter, I think I would have made that happen. And it's kind of somewhat similar to what you were saying, you know, like making sure he knew that I was talking to him and getting in close enough and so on and so forth. But the way I got around the first bull was to call him up and see what they look like first, because I really wasn't sure. You know how,
yeah. Man,
how many times have you heard this little pussy bugle and it be this giant ass bull, you know?
Yep.
I mean, it's like like rubs, you know, big rubs aren't made by small elk, but little rubs can be made by big elk, you know, and vice versa with the bugles, you know, little elk can't make big bugles, but big elk make little bugles sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and I wasn't sure. I mean, he was a decent bull for sure. We got him on film and everything. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
So anyway, so, next scenario I got for you, let's see. You have a bull, okay? He's answering you from a couple hundred yards, you know, a few hundred yards away. But every time you close the distance, you know, every time you get within that 100, 150 yard range, he rounds up his cows and he moves further away. But he's happy to keep answering you. Once he gets back out to his comfort zone, you know, outside of that 200, whatever, he's happy to answer you. And he doesn't go far. He just keeps moving, you know, few hundred yards at a time. What do you do in a situation like this?
Yeah, and I think that's probably that classic scenario that so many of us have experienced. And, you know, it's just that classic bugle and run. And they'll bugle all morning long, but you never see them. You can't get close to them. And I think there, you know, there's a lot of things that could be causing it. But I think the two most common things are a younger bull who is, he's got himself a harem. And he's wanting to be the herd bull, but he knows that the real herd bull can take his cows in a moment's notice. And so he's just super timid. He's mouthy. He's not afraid to talk, but he just doesn't want to engage in a fight. Or the other one is the actual herd bull, a big herd bull who has a cow that is in estrus, or, you know, his cows are on the move and he just doesn't want to take the chance of getting too far away from his cows. And so You have to really think about what the attitude of those bulls are and understand what they're thinking. You know, that younger bull, he's king of the mountain. He's happy to broadcast his bugle, but mm-hmm. he doesn't want to engage in a fight because he knows that he's going to be outmatched and will probably lose the cows. So he's doing everything he can to keep those cows moving, to keep ahead of this challenger that's trying to come in and potentially steal his cows. So he's not going to be as apt to, you know, if you get really aggressive with the bugling and start screaming at him, he's not going to be as apt to turn and come in. He, on the other hand, you know, if you give him some seductive cow calls, he might start getting a little bit arrogant and thinking, you know, I can add one more cow to my harem here. I'm going to run back and check that out. So, you know, on the other side, a big herd bull that's running a harem, that's got a cow in estrus, or cows are just on the move going to the bedding area, and he doesn't want to come back 300 yards while they're on the move going the opposite way. He probably isn't going to be as apt to come back to check out a cow. But if you get in close, and again, we'll talk a little more on that detail, but you've got to get close to him, and then you want to get aggressive. You want to let him know, hey, I'm coming in to fight because I want your cows, mm-hmm. and he's got to turn around and protect them. So just understanding that mindset of that elk, you know, that those are the two most common situations. And if you can determine, is this a younger bull that's just trying to run with cows, or is it a big herd bull that's just focused on his cows, then you can kind of come up with your strategy and your approach. But you have to play to those, the emotions and the mindset of each of those bulls. And then you have to be able to get the bull's attention. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, let's focus on that bigger bull, a big herd bull that's got cows. He's focused in on them. I think that's just classic. And I've spent so many mornings, you know, 2 or 3 hours of hundreds of bugles from that bull, never getting close enough to even see him, let alone, you know, get it close enough to call him in and get a shot. But you've got to push in close enough that you make him feel like, okay, I have to turn around and go and push this guy away. He's getting too close to the cows. It's just, he's a threat now. The hard part is you've got a herd of cows there. And as you're moving in, trying to get close, you have all those eyes and ears and noses that are potentially going to pick you off. And so it's got to be strategic. 300 yards out just isn't going to do it. And the strategy that we use in that situation, we still like to use the two call or the two person setup. So you've got a caller back behind, a shooter out in front. That shooter just works in slow, gets as close as he can quietly. The caller's still back there at that 200 to 250 yards, calling, keeping that bull vocal. And then once that shooter gets in a situation where he recognizes, okay, I'm close, I'm 100, 120, 150 yards, whatever it is, from the bull, the caller just bugled from back at, you know, 250 yards or whatever, the bull answers. Now that shooter becomes the caller, and he screams and challenges that bull from in close. And the bull is thinking, okay, I just heard this bugle from 250 yards, and now all of a sudden the bull is 150 yards. He's pushing in hard. He's making a play. He's coming into my cows. I've got to turn and fight him, push him off, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is. So the bull turns, he commits to coming in, and then the shooter goes quiet. The caller, who's, you know, another 80 yards behind or whatever, takes over. But at that point, the bull has committed to coming in, and he can, you know, the caller can then pull him right through the shooter's setup. We call it the slingshot because basically we're trying to slingshot that shooter up into position, commit the bull, and then pull him back into the setup once it comes. And we actually, here in Idaho, we had a hunt a couple of years ago where we're moving up the mountain. It's a big bull, big sounding bull. and he's with cows, and we push and push and push, and we just can't get him to turn around. He is as vocal as can be, but those cows are on the move, heading to the bedding area. They're moving up the mountain. The bull knows that he turns around and comes down the hill 200 or 300 yards to us. Those cows are going to get another 200 or 300 yards away, and pretty soon he's 500 yards behind them, and now they're vulnerable to another bull coming in. And so I got up and I could see him moving on the ridge 120, 150 yards in front of me. I could see the cows filtering through and he's bugling, you know, back and forth, running back to grab a cow, pushing her up the hill. And almost more out of frustration and desperation, he bugled and I just screamed a bugle, and I'm the shooter out in front. And as soon as I did that, his head turned and you could just see his attitude change, and he turned and started just storming down the hill towards me. Uh-huh. And I went quiet, and fortunately, you know, the caller back behind picked right up, bugled, and that bull's attention, it was like he didn't even think about the fact that I bugled from 120 yards down and now the bugle's coming from 200 yards down. He'd already committed, made up his mind. I'm going down and I'm fighting that bull and I'm letting him know, don't come any farther up my mountain. And he came right through my setup at 30 yards, heading right down, focus on the calls that were coming from the caller back behind. And I was able to get the shot and kill what turned out to be the biggest bull that I've shot in Idaho.
Nice. Nice. You know, something about your story rings out to me. Like, I feel like the times that that scenario works out better is always when you're calling from below them, because eventually that bull's like, I got the higher ground. I got the upper hand. And it like almost makes them feel a little bit safer. Do you see that, or is that not a correlation you've put?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes from when we hear these bulls bugling and running, it's typically because they're following the cows back to a bedding area. And typically they're moving from the lower country where they've been feeding and spent the night. They're moving up the mountain with the thermals in their face, so they're protected. So the situation is almost always us moving up a mountain following the elk. So naturally it puts them above us when they're bugling and running. Right. And yeah, trying to get them to turn around and come back down, that's usually the situation we're in, is below them on the mountain. The hard part about it is sometimes, you know, they absolutely have that upper hand when they're above us. And if it's open country, a lot of times they can get to a vantage point where visually they have that upper hand, and it's hard to get them to come any farther down. If they get to a point where they can see where your calls are coming from and they don't see an elk, they're going to stand there and hold their ground until they see something that makes them feel confident to come in. So they do have the upper hand. And if you're in the right setup, being below them could be an advantage for you to pull them down. But it also, if it's that open country, it could become a disadvantage because of their visual platform they have.
Cool. So I'm just going to share a scenario with you that it's actually 2 years in a row, and I'm almost positive it's the same bull. And you might have heard Shannon talk about it when you were there hunting with him, a bull called Patrick.
Yeah.
You heard of him?
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure Corey and I got into Patrick twice, once with just me and Corey, then once with Corey, myself, and Shannon. And it was the same scenario. And I kept getting to 60 yards. At one point, I was 25 yards from his cows. And he would just not – You know how thick it is over there.
Yeah.
He would just not come in. Like, he would not. He just kept going. And then last year, my cousin Anthony and I, and I did that same scenario. You know, I call him behind me the whole bit, you know, and just wouldn't work. And I think I think this particular bull has just really been educated. You know, he's been hunted enough times maybe that, and he's old. I did get a good look at him. My cousin Anthony and I, we got in real tight on them. I knew where they were. We left them there the night before, and I backed out, and they were literally on the same hillside in this reprod. The next morning, we got in super tight. I started coming down the ridge a little bit. I did a little lost cow mewing just to see if, and I heard him groan below us. And I cut the distance a whole bunch, and to the point where I could see bits and pieces of his cows. And, you know, then I started engaging him. And again, you know, he would come and he would freaking just hang up right there where, and I was creating the room too, you know, like he wasn't hanging up where the hang up spot would have been. He still couldn't see me, you know, for a while. The only reason why I could see him, because I could see the tips of his antlers above, you know, these jack pines, these little, you know, little reprod pines. And, yeah, man, it was so frustrating. Frustrating as all hell. I really wanted to kill him because I know Shannon had tried a bunch of times and had opportunities and hit a couple branches and shot a tree once. And so I kind of wanted to end the, end the saga for him. But anyway, it didn't end up working out, but he kept doing the same thing. He would take the cows and he would go like 150 yards, you know, down the ridge. And my cousin and I just, you know, kept shadowing the herd. And I even waited like an hour at one point. So not to make any sounds for like an hour, and I knew they were feeding below us. I could hear the cows and whatever, and still nothing. You know, I even changed it up. I even tried to call to his cows at the second point, but I don't know. I just could not get this bull to do anything that I wanted him to do. But yeah. Anyway, so my final scenario for you, and I've been faced with this a couple times before. You hear a bunch of cows early in the morning feeding below you. You're pretty sure there's a bull with them, but it's thick. You can't glass them up. He's not making any noise. He hasn't made a peep, but you've thrown out some other, you know, cow sounds and stuff like that. How are you verifying that there's a bull there, and how are you getting him killed if he answers back?
Man, that's a tough one. And that, you know, I think my initial thought is I love calling. That's, for me, that's the thrill of elk hunting. And so if I'm in an area where I know there are elk, but I can't get a bull to bugle, I think my first reaction is just move on. Go and find an elk that will bugle. Because number one, if I can finally get a peep out of him, or if I finally see him and he's not calling at all, mm-hmm. the chances of me calling him in are really low. Right. You know, that bull is just, he's not vocal. If he's not vocal, you know, I'm going to have a really hard time calling him in. So I think my first thought is, you know, if there are other options, I'm just going to go find an elk that is bugling. But I've been on hunts before where it's so tough hunting and the elk just aren't vocal and I can't find elk, that I'm not going to walk away from a potential opportunity. And so in those cases, first, you know, you've got to verify there's a bull. You can't glass it all. It makes it tough. And, you know, I saw that, I think, you know, you were talking about hunting Roosevelt elk with Shannon and Corey. We saw that a lot, that we would get in this pocket and it'd be like, I know there's a bull here. Whether we heard him bugle first thing in the morning and we worked in there after 2 or 3 hours, we finally get in this little pocket. It's like, I know he's here. And sometimes it would take 45 minutes of us just raking a tree and throwing out a bugle and a couple cow calls here and there. And then all of a sudden, 45 minutes later, this bull who's been there the whole time lets out 4 or 5 little chuckles from 150 yards away. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it's like, all right, game on. We know he's here. We knew he was here. Now we can go in there and we can get in his grill and we can try to fire him up and try to get him to come in. And I think Roosevelt are a little different story. You know, sometimes they're like that, where they're a little bit quieter. But I think once you know they're there, you can work them in, and, you know, it might take an hour, but they'll come in there real slowly and a branch will pop. And all of a sudden, here come those antler tips above the brush or whatever. So I think patience in those situations is really important. If you're hearing the cows and they're kind of just feeding along the hill, you know, you mentioned shadowing. And I think this is that perfect opportunity where you just move slow and quiet, take a few steps and glass through the filtered trees or the brush or whatever, just looking to get as close as you can, trying to figure out, you know, okay, they're moving side hilling across here, going around into this draw. If the wind's good, I'm going to get myself in a position that maybe they'll come by me and I can get a look at the bull. In those situations, though, I think getting aggressive with calls probably isn't the right thing to do. And you know, it's hard for me. It's like, if there's a bull there, I want to sit here and bugle over and over and over and over and over and get him to bugle back. And then once he does, you know, then I've got that confirmation. But I think just slow and quiet and patient is the right thing to do in that situation. As hard as it is, it's the right thing to do.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I'd always rather call them in too, but I'm not going to pass up an opportunity ever. Even if I know there is a bull bugling, you know, a mile away or whatever, I have a hard time leaving the bird in the hand. I'm a different kind of cat. Like even when I'm deer hunting, I even though I know there's a 180 over the next ridge, but there's a 160 sitting 50 yards from me, I'm going to shoot the 160. but you know, like that's kind of how I am. But I feel like I think one of the things that I would do on this is hit them with some of that, the other audible sounds that bulls make, you know, like you said, kind of like what they're doing, like, you know, they might be raking a tree. You might hear stuff down there, whatever that you know, that says, he says it's a bull.
Yeah.
But he's not, he may not be bugling, but he might be panting and whatever and doing his thing. And then every once in a while, there'll be a little whine. I feel like that's the thing that you hear in Oregon a lot. It's like out of nowhere. It's just like a little whine and that's it. And he won't actually bugle at you.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I mean, once you confirm that bull's there, you know, then it becomes a different story. Then you know there's a bull there and you can move in. It's just that initial, sometimes it turns out to be a 3-hour waste of time. And it's like, where is the bull? There's 9 cows that just came out in the hillside and no bull with them. And I've spent all morning trying to work in and get a bugle. And that's why there was no bugle, is there's just not a bull there.
Yeah, awesome. Any other words of wisdom? That was my last scenario for you for this particular.
You know, I really try to keep things simple and not overcomplicate it. You know, as far as words of wisdom, I don't have a lot of wisdom. I have a lot of experience and a lot of lessons learned from failure for sure. But I think the biggest thing is just don't give up, you know, always keep pushing, always be ready to adapt. And don't hesitate to just pull up roots. If you aren't getting into elk, you've got to go and find the elk. And so many times I hear people say, I picked a spot and went there and didn't hear a single bugle for 8 days. And it's like, were you staying in the same place? Well, yeah, we're just hunting out of a camp. And every day I'd leave and go up a different ridge. And man, for me, if I'm not hearing a bugle on the first morning, unless I'm seeing a ton of sign, I'm moving and I'm going to a completely different area if I need to, until I start seeing the sign or getting into the bugles. And you got to stay mobile. You got to be ready to adapt and be flexible. And then once you get into them, you know, you're going to mess up. You're going to have mistakes, and you can't let those mistakes and failures become an anchor and pull you down. You've got to let them be lessons that step you up to the next opportunity, and you push on and just keep going until it happens.
Awesome. Well, man, I want to thank you for taking the time out and sharing all your knowledge with us and going over these scenarios. Guys, if you want really good in-depth information, Corey runs the best elk hunting website there is, Elk 101. If you hadn't heard of it, you've been living under a rock, but get on there, check it out. There's a lot of other stuff to help you put the pieces of the puzzle together. Thanks again, man. Thanks for coming on, and good luck on that bear hunt. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on, John.
Absolutely.